Hi, this is Martha Shelley, your lesbian sportscaster. And here we go with another issue of Lesbian Nation. Today we're going to have a report in honor of Billie Jean King from the second annual Feminist Fumblers softball game, in which I participated as your local fumbler. I'd like to say that my team says that we won by a point, and the other team says that both teams tied 9-9. And as a reporter, I'm not allowed to take sides, but I did get some interesting coverage of some of the plays, and I'll put that out in the air for you. It was a windy day that threatened to rain any minute. So you can hear a lot of wind noise on some very poor equipment that is not BAI equipment, but it was the only thing available at the game. After that, I'm going to have an interview with a woman track star and an interview with Judy Wenning, president of New York Now and head of Now's National Task Force on Sports. So let's get on with the game.
All right, we're out here at the baseball diamond in Prospect Park for a women's softball game. And I noticed that a lot of players here are wearing a button that says 6-4, 6-3, 6-3. What's that all about? Come on, you.
It's her current dimensions.
64, 63, 63.
63.
Well, what's it about?
King's score versus Bobby Riggs' score in the last Battle of the Sexes tennis tournament.
Well, represents the glorious victory of woman over something.
Well, frankly, if it weren't for that game, I probably wouldn't be out here.
We're definitely sure in today's game that a woman's team is going to win today.
Since there are two women's teams. And the sky is quite overcast, the wind is high, and we expect to be rained out, which is a great excuse, like having your period. Joyce was pitching for a minute. Now there's somebody up there that I don't know. She's pitching. And Joyce is going back to catching because she doesn't seem to be able to throw the ball over the home plate. And Sandy's up at bat. And the ball just went out through a hole in the fence and right past the water fountain. There's one fellow on the team, I forget his name, but he's somebody's husband, and he's out in the outfield. And seems to be doing all right and catching Sandy's bunts. Sandy just got herself onto second with a bunt that nobody thought to pick up before she got there. And this other woman, whose name I don't know, just hit a pop fly that was caught by Barbara Love. The catcher right now is a woman wearing a sweatshirt emblazoned with the words, "Trust in God, she will provide." And somebody just hit. Wow, Sandy just got a homer. Because nobody seems to manage to catch the ball very well once it's been hit. So it really doesn't matter how far you hit it or how near. Once you do hit it, you know, you can get pretty far around here. Jan Crawford is up at bat. And whoops, too low. She struck for it, though. I don't know whether you call it a strike or... Here comes another one. She's hit it! And she is out. Sandy caught it. Well, Jan is out, but under the new flexible rules, Jan gets a chance to hit it again. And she hits another pop to first. High pop foul to infield. That's what Jan called it. I'm not sure what to call it myself. And this was just sort of bounced off the end of the bat and went to the catcher. Now everybody's changing positions. It sort of looked like an elaborate minuet. Joyce is testing the bats, decided she likes the one she's got. Oh, wow. She just hit a nice one, and it went to the outfield, and the guy in the outfield finally caught it after tripping over it and tossed it back to Sandy, who is pitching again, and there goes Joyce with a high ball to second base. Right. Nice fly to Barbara Love, who tosses it back to Sandy, and there goes Joyce. She hit it again, and the guy in the outfield caught it. Now here comes BJ and a couple other friends. Gino Leary. BJ got a Fresca. I think it's about time we had a picnic instead of this thing. Rowena just hit and got herself out. Joyce caught it. Jan Crawford caught it for once when it was thrown to her at first. And Rowena is out. Oh, wow. A nice high ball, which went straight to Jan. And she got it. Apparently, we're playing by new rules. The idea is to let the batter get in a few solid hits for her ego and then let somebody else take a turn at bat. And Gina Leary is up at bat. All her white teeth are shining. And she just hit it, and Stu caught it. It was a beautiful hit.
Jesus Christ, who's he throwing to?
Who's up now? What's her name?
Jan Peterson.
Jan Peterson is at bat.
Slugger Peterson.
I see.
Who was 5 feet three and just struck at a ball that came approximately 10 feet over the mound. Very optimistic, Slugger.
Yeah, she just hit one that was way over her head.
Those lobs is really good.
Yeah,
and playing high lie or something.
She'll hit at anything, and she connects sometimes. Wow, she hit one that, you know, like it could have been a ball if she let it go over her head. Went straight to the outfield. Stu finally managed to get his hands on it.
That's how you always hit the ball, Jan.
She just hauls that bat up in the air and takes a hit at it.
What's more, she connects.
She's doing vertical right, and horizontal hitting. It's an innovation.
It's
like
a combination
the
of golf and tennis.
Two-hand
backhand. Too much. She just leaped up. The ball went way up. She leaped up into the air and took a swing at it with the bat in one hand. And she missed.
In case you're ever wondering how we managed to get 9-9 or 9-8, depending on which side you were on, out of that particular game, it turned out, I found out, that that wasn't the game after all. That was just the warm-ups. And then when the real game came around, we had to play by the same old rules that I learned, or thought I'd learned, when I was a kid. Finally, we managed to get through with the thing, and we got indoors to a party, and I managed to drag Judy Wenning into a back room to interview her about the now sports committee.
Well, now I'm interviewing Judy Wenning, who was involved in our softball game today, and who I understand is head of a national task force on sports for now.
Yes, that's coordinator of the National Task Force on Women in Sports for National now.
And also president of the New York chapter.
Currently, yes.
Oh, well, what happens? Are you expecting to get dumped or what?
No, January, the third Thursday in January will be the elections for the coming year, and then someone else will be elected president.
Oh, but you're going to stay the coordinator for a while?
For a while, yes. The next national conference is Memorial Day weekend in 1973. And at that time, there will be a workshop on sports. And following that elections, the new president has the right to appoint any task force coordinator that they would like.
So also, what is the task force doing?
The task force is doing a lot, and some of it, well, we have actually about 6 pages of the things that the task force is doing. One of the things that we're first doing is to get sports committees going in each of the 600 now chapters throughout the United States. And we have sports committees in approximately 150 currently, so that's a pretty good start. We are working to try to get Little League's Act of Congress changed. There is a bill in Congress right now put in by Martha Griffiths of Michigan, which would change the wording of the Act of Congress to say that Little League would be open to all boys and girls rather than all boys.
I didn't know that Little League was established by Congress.
Yes, it has been established by Congress, and it operates under the auspices of Congress and with the goodwill of Congress, and only Congress can change the charter for Little League. So that's why we're going through Congress to try to change it. And hopefully people will write in and ask that the bill that Martha Griffiths has in about Little League be changed so that it would include boys and girls in Little League activities.
I don't understand that. I mean, to me, like, establishing a sport by act of Congress is almost like establishing religion, you know, like one over another. Baseball is not my favorite sport. I don't understand that.
Well, actually, many organizations are chartered by act of Congress if they're national organizations. So the organization itself was chartered by Congress and exists as an organization because of that. It's not unusual, and Congress and the government are involved in a lot of sports and in the regulation of a lot of sports, and currently they're trying to change that relationship and actually become more involved in it.
Are you active in any sports yourself?
I am an active, enthusiastic player for my own pleasure. I play a lot of paddleball. Here in New York City, I play a little tennis, and I water ski occasionally and play some golf whenever I'm out of the city, and then participate in volleyball and basketball whenever it's available, and practically any other sport that comes along, because I enjoy it, and I enjoy the feeling of having my body in good shape and seeing that I can develop my own skills.
What are you doing nationally in terms of sports that have been in the news lately, like tennis?
Yes, it has come to the public mind. We're doing several things. We are trying to encourage and institute new community programs for women and for girls, and we are also trying to get Title IX enforced. I don't know if you know about that, but Title IX was a federal educational amendment that was passed last year, which bars discrimination on the basis of sex in any school programs, activities, or policies, any school that receives any kind of federal funds, and that applies to practically every school in the country. So we're trying to get the funding, facilities, and coaching of all the schools in the country, including everything through elementary through university, to expand their programs for women and girls and equalize them. We're also trying to get media coverage of women in sports, and the fact that Billie Jean King had to play a match that was that highly publicized against Bobby Riggs, who is a hustler, in order to get media coverage speaks of the pathetic state of media and their relationship and their opinion of women in sports. Last year, out of 366 hours of sports televised on NBC, only 1 hour was devoted to women. And CBS had 265 hours of men and men's sports and 10 hours of women's sports. So the situation is really terrible for media coverage of women in sports. And Billie Jean King has been very instrumental in improving the coverage. And women do give good performances, and people will pay to see them. And there should be more women sportscasters and sports writers who are covering them, such as Rosemary Casals, who did a terrific job the other day.
Is Billie Jean a member of NOW?
Yes, she is not only a member of NOW, she's a member of the advisory council of the New York chapter of NOW, and she has been a resource person for the National Task Force on Sports, and she is a fantastic feminist.
We got into a little discussion for those of us who are never going to be Billie Jean Kings and whose major accomplishments in the sports field will be getting onto first base during a fumbler softball game.
One of the main concerns that I have, not having been very athletic or successfully so, and not having had the programs available, and having seen that men have defined sports in our culture, I am very concerned that we as women redefine sports so that it does not become the superstar big business enterprise that it is currently. And I think that's largely due to the male values accorded to sports. We would like to see it redefined so that all people enter sports for their own enjoyment and the enjoyment of developing their bodies and using their bodies and being functionally capable of doing with your bodies what you would like to and then enjoying that use of it. And then if you wish to compete also, that is fine, but that the competition is based on the ideal of two worthy competitors or a number of worthy competitors competing and the satisfaction and the joy of competing with other people who also respect your performance, whether you win or not. And I think that that's something that's going to come, and we saw at the Women's Olympics last weekend where everybody played and competed and took part, and we cheered the people who finished last just as much as we cheered the people who finished first because they were out there trying and enjoying it.
What that reminds me of is Robin Morgan once wrote a poem about it started from a remark that she heard made on a plane where this one guy who was in a wheelchair, you know, he's obviously crippled for life from an auto accident or something, was talking to somebody who's sitting in next to him about football heroes and saying, this guy is a real man, you know, a real man. And she looked at the guy who was in the wheelchair and thinking, my God, what he must think of himself if what he thinks is a real man is some huge hunk of beef and can't accept himself as a human being.
Right, and I think that we can safely say that with the new world based on feminist values, that will not be how we measure the worth of a person.
Next, I interviewed Judith Rawcliffe, who was a competitive runner and all-around track person some years ago, and just got back into it through the Women's Olympics that was held last weekend here in New York.
Hi, you are Judith Rawcliffe, and you were at the Women's Olympics thing. What was that like?
Yeah, I coordinated the track events for the Women's Olympics, which was held last Sunday.
Who set it up? I didn't even hear about it.
It was sponsored by Lesbian Feminist Liberation and now helped them out with it.
So it wasn't exactly the, you know, the official U.S. or World Women's Olympics.
No, there is no official World Women's Olympics. It was our first New York Women's Olympics. We're going to make it an annual thing.
How did you get into the track thing?
You mean how did I get into this meet? I went to a Now Sports Committee meeting 2 weeks before the meet. The first committee meeting I'd ever been to, and discovered they were going to have it. And when I asked them what type of implement they were going to use for the shot put, they sort of looked at me with blank expressions and said, we haven't the faintest idea, do you? And I said, well, yes, I have a shot put in my car. You can use it. And they sort of pounced on me and made me track coordinator.
I thought track was running.
Well, it is, yeah. Well, track and field, you know, normally go together. I know the events and the rules for all of the track and field events.
That would include the javelin and stuff like that?
Right, yeah.
Did you participate in any of it?
Yeah, I have participated in track and field from 62 to 68 as a contender for the U.S. Olympic team. And my events that I was a serious contender in were hurdles and long jump, although I have done virtually all of them, including javelin and discus and shot, high jump, but and at some time have run anywhere from 50 yards to a marathon.
Oh, that's where you run 26 miles?
Right, that's 26 miles. And the first one that I entered was the Pikes Peak Marathon. I was in Denver, and we went to Pikes Peak, and I guess the high altitude made me lightheaded because for some reason I entered the marathon, which began at 5,000 feet, and we had run to the top of Pikes Peak, which was about 7,500 feet, 13 miles up, and 13 miles back down at 5,000 feet.
I can't even imagine, you know, like running more than around the Central Park reservoir. After I'd done that, I'm spent.
Yeah, well, the only difference between a marathon and the Central Park reservoir is the marathon just hurts for a longer amount of time. It doesn't hurt anymore, just for a longer amount of time.
Does it have to hurt?
I'm afraid so. I have never heard of anyone whom it didn't hurt. I mean, serious, you know, distance running, it hurts.
Yeah. Are you planning to go back into competition?
I think I will. I haven't competed for 5 years, but I had such a good time on Sunday, and none of my injuries hurt, and I think I'm going to do it. I think now I have the physical and psychological maturity to succeed in a greater measure than I did before. And I did qualify for the Olympic trials in 64 and 68, so to, and I have some national AAU medals, so to some extent I was successful, but I think I am ready to be more so and able to be more so.
Do you think you'd be doing coaching for the Women's Olympics here?
I don't think I'm going to be doing coaching seriously as long as I am competing, because I don't find the two compatible. When I'm training, I train at a much faster and harder pace than I would coach at. Someone that I'm coaching would be more or less of a beginner, and I would have to slow down my own training pace so greatly that my own training would suffer.
So people who coach are usually retired, say, from the competition?
In track and field, that's pretty much the case. I've never heard of there being such a thing as a player coach in track and field. It's not like baseball or something where you can combine the two.
Do you think a lot of people would be getting into it who, say, aren't serious contenders for the Olympics or something like that, but just want to be doing it for enjoyment?
You're speaking of here in New York?
Yeah.
Yes, the meet on Sunday was a fun thing. There wasn't any serious competition really at all, other than between a woman and herself, whether or not she could run a mile. I mean, this was a great experience for someone who had never ever attempted it, and a great victory that they started it and finished it, and no one cared who won or what the time was. It was just achieving the goal. The only one I competed with was myself. My psychological and physical injuries that I had sustained earlier years in the sport, and I was happy with my performances. They weren't great, but they were all right. They were respectable.
What kind of psychological injuries would you have sustained? Or, you know, I don't want to be asking, you know, prying questions, but do you think it has something to do with being a woman or something that would happen, you know, things that happen to people who are in sports in general?
No, I think what I mean by that is I did sustain a serious physical injury. I had to have a cartilage removed from my knee. I felt at that time psychologically that they might as well have cut off my head or cut off my legs, because I, as far as I knew, I couldn't compete in running again. And it was, it did hurt when I tried to run. It was hard for me to try because it did hurt. And this whole psychological thing of trying and having it hurt and then being afraid to try because it will hurt. At that time, I just tried too hard for the potential that I had. I had certainly some potential, but I didn't reach physical maturity until after I stopped competing. So I think I just tried too hard for the potential I had at that time. If you try like that and you can't possibly achieve your goal, you just have repeated failure. And this builds in a psychological conditioning to defeat.
So I suppose the thing to do, particularly when you're practicing or if you're coaching, is to set realistic goals. Like, I know if I were to start running, you know, I'm getting on towards 30, I would never become any kind of competition runner in the AAU or anything. But I might want to be doing it for my health and for fun.
Right, well, what you say about realistic goals is important, because when I did begin competition, which was at 16 years of age, I didn't have any goals, I had dreams. And I think when you become an adult, you sort of have to mix your dreams with reality, and you come out with some kind of a realistic goal. And I think I've gotten to the point where hopefully my goals are realistic, but I know that if I try the very best that I can, that I'm able to accept failure. If it's a failure that's achieved after trying, if it's a failure that's achieved by not bothering to try, that I can't accept.
How old do are people who are runners? I know that in the Olympics you're pretty young when you're competing. They all seem to be awfully young people. But I understand that marathon runners can be older than the average. You're not over the hill and dead before you're 30.
Well, that's right. But generally, when people look at Olympic athletes, they tend to look at the more glamorous sports such as gymnastics and swimming. And the competitors in gymnastics and swimming are very young. Some of the swimmers are 13 and 14. Now, this is an absolute physical impossibility for a track athlete to have that kind of prominence by that age. It's just the fact that there's a different type of muscular development needed for swimming and for running. Most of your runners are probably between 19 and 25, most of your Olympic contenders. And your long-distance runners are older, some of them well into their 30s, and one or two even in their early 40s. The oldest woman that I know, and I may be wrong, the oldest woman I know in international competition is Willie White from Chicago. She is a first-class long jumper and sprinter, and she's 31 or 32 now. I've been trying to catch her for years.
Well, I remember trotting around the Central Park Reservoir, seeing white-haired old men just sort of jogging around for their health. And it seems like something that you can do for fun and for health for a long time, unlike maybe the high jump.
Right. Well, it seems to be. I did my master's work in sports physiology, and it seems to be that if you, in your youth, take up sports seriously and you develop your particularly heart and lungs to sports efficiency, that if you want to even maintain cardiovascular health in your middle age and later, you have to keep on with sports. Because what happens is, if an athlete becomes sedentary, the heart muscle and the lungs become fat and crusted because they're not used to the capacity that was developed during this strenuous athletics. And when that happens, you've got the person set up for a coronary. That's what happens so often if you read about a professional football player. He may have a heart attack at 35. He's been out of the sport for maybe 5 or 8 years. And he's just stopped all activity, and all of a sudden he drops dead at 35 or 40 of a heart attack. And you wonder, how can someone in that good a condition, how could that happen to him? Well, the fact that he was in that condition is exactly what set him up for it.
Well, what about professional bookworms like me?
Professional bookworms, I think, would do well to jog around the Central Park Reservoir. If you keep doing it, you'll probably notice that you're jogging long after most of your sedentary friends are dead.
That was Martha Shelley, your Lesbian Nation sportscaster. We'll be back next week, same time, same station, WBAI.